Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Science Bloggers podcast. I'm David Latchman, and this episode's guest is Mark LeSavio. Mark is a marine biologist who works with his university to teach surrounding communities in Boston about the ocean. Mark also tells us how his university engages with schools in Boston, what he learned from using VR to teach people about the ocean, and why we as science communicators need to engage more with adults. So, hello, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fine. I guess we're all shut in at this point in time. I don't know. Probably we get a little stir crazy once in a while. I don't know about you.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. I think if you're not stir crazy by now, I think I don't want to say something's wrong with you, but...
You're very strong.
So, why don't we start by telling the listeners a little something about yourself and what you do?
Well, first, I want to say that I just listened to your most recent podcast with the aquarist.
Oh,
and
Kevin McAvoy.
It's really convenient.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really convenient because I guess...
You're sort of an Aquarius as well.
Yeah.
Or you did at one point in time.
He has my dream job, I guess, basically. But I am right now what I do part-time is I work with my university's outreach department to try and like teach the local communities around Boston area about the ocean. Although there hasn't, since there are no schools in session right now, I haven't really been doing a whole lot of anything.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I just graduated with my master's in marine biology this winter, actually. So I entered the job search right about the time the world kind of shut down, which is super unfortunate.
Oh, no. Yeah, I can imagine. That kind of sucked. So how is the job search going in times of a global pandemic? You know, are you getting responses? Are you seeing more? Well, I guess you're seeing less ads now.
Not a lot of responses. I've applied to like 40 jobs so far and only gotten 2 rejections. And that's it. Not a lot of new postings have come up, understandably. I mean, no one's really thinking about hiring a new guy right now. And
yeah,
if jobs are becoming vacant, they're probably not going to be filled for a while.
Yeah, that's true. It's a very uncertain time, you know, and you know, I guess we're all doing the best that we can, you know, given these circumstances. But I really hope something comes up for you and you get your dream job.
Yes, me too.
So you have a master's in marine biology. So what prompted you to pursue that?
Well, I guess I've kind of always been obsessed with the ocean. And I've always also been obsessed with people. And those two things kind of like smush together into, I guess, telling people about the ocean. And so I guess I've always kind of been a science communicator, where in the, so like in your last episode, I don't know if it'll be the last episode by the time this one comes out, but in the one with the aquarist, he talks about how in some circumstances, people can't necessarily always go to the aquarium.
Yeah.
Even though it would be cool if everybody could. So there are some people who would take materials, take animals, take like programming out into the public, out to schools where there might not be an aquarium, a big aquarium, or it might not be reasonable to expect them to get to that aquarium. And that's what I do right now.
So which aquarium are you working with right now, if you can say it?
So I'm not working with an aquarium right now. I'm working with my university's like marine science department, and they have kind of like a one really big touch tank of animals that people will come and visit, and like it's basically like crabs and a lobster and some starfish. It's mostly just local things, and we'll take those animals out to schools in the Boston area.
Oh, that sounds amazing. So, okay, so the episode you're talking about is with Kevin McAvoy. And, you know, I'd encourage anyone else to listen to it. So I guess I can talk to you about those outreach efforts and what it takes to maintain those tanks, I guess that's what you call them, as you take them. So what do you have to do to maintain that and ensure that these animals are ready for transport and making sure they get to and from their location safely?
So our system is a little different than like a public aquarium, because our marine science facility is located like on the water and pretty far away from the Boston city center. So we're able to pump our water in and through our touch tank system, which is basically like two hot tub sized pools, and they're shallow, that we keep the animals in. And then we just like pump it right out. So it's basically just an indoor tide pool.
Okay.
Which makes it really easy on filtration, because all of our animals come directly from the waters right around the center. Our program also has a really like robust scientific diving program. So we get a lot of people going out to do research, and they have collection permits, and they'll bring back animals for us to add to our collection. So it's really convenient.
That sounds, pretty awesome, because when I was talking to Kevin, there were a lot of options that you can use to get the water that you need. And as you probably heard, and in some cases, some aquariums have to make their own, actually mix the salts. And I think it's like really cool that, you can pump that water in and not have to worry about mixing any stuff. Maybe easier. I don't know. Is it?
Well, for us, it's nice because all of our animals just come from that area anyways. So we don't have to worry about the water becoming too warm or seasonal changes happening, because those animals are already used to that stuff. But if for some reason we were to get like a coral reef tank opened up, we probably would have to at least change the water in some way to make it meet their needs.
So how do you like go to schools? Is it something that they invite you to, or do you have someone reaching out to the schools and saying, hey, we have this like really cool outreach program, do you want us to come over?
So we used to be that way, but we schools really like that. They really like having someone else come in and bring something really cool that ties into their lesson.
Yeah.
So they'll usually reach out to us, and we're usually like pretty booked all year. It's hard to fit in new schools and new programs. And we have different programs depending on the season. So in the warmer months, in the spring and early fall, we'll have a program where the students will come out to us. They will learn about some aspect of the rocky intertidal, which is the habitat that we have right off of our university. And then they'll go out, they'll do some science, they'll do a study, they'll put down some quadrats, measure the salinity or the pH of the water, and then they'll go on like a tour of the lab and then go back to school. But in the wintertime, when it's too cold to do any of that, we'll take the animals to them and talk about like adaptations or how the animals are adapted to live in their environment.
Oh, so what age groups are these schools, and what grades?
So the touch tank, when we bring the animals to the schools, it's usually younger kids, like third grade, fourth grade. I think I've done like a kindergarten program. But for the program where they come to do the science at the university, it's usually high school.
So how do the kids like it? Teenagers, I guess? Kids and teenagers?
Teenagers. Yes and no. They don't necessarily like the inside parts too much. It's kind of a mix. The students that don't like the inside part really, really like the outdoors part. And the ones that don't like the outdoors part really like the indoors part or the tours. So we try to hit every box.
Oh, that's interesting. Why do you think it's like that? Like kids that like the inside don't like the outside and vice versa?
Well, a lot of the students, especially in high school, don't want to go on a field trip and sit down and like crunch data on snails. And a lot of the schools we reach out to, I don't know how to put this, they're in communities that don't necessarily get to go on a lot of field trips to see the outdoors and see the ocean a lot.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are disgusted or afraid of the animals that we'll find, or even the seaweed, Well, actually, most people are not excited about seaweed until you get up close. So
yeah, because I think the one of the things that I think we had mentioned in the last episode with Kevin, and this is something that a lot of wildlife biologists have said, is that the best way to get people engaged with their local flora and fauna is to actually show it to them, then get them up close and personal. Is that something you've observed?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And what I really like about our programs is that we try to get them, you have to do more than just like show them a crab, right?
Right.
You have to show them the crab, and then what does this have to do with the ecosystem around it? And what does it have to do with me? And so that's why we have them do the science. Like, how many crabs are there? How many snails are there? Are there more snails in this area where there are less crabs, kind of thing? And then after all that, we take them on a tour of the facilities to meet some of the scientists that are doing these kinds of research, to show them that they're number one, they're real people too. And they came from the same schools that you did. They're just like you. It's not some like guy in a lab coat and with glasses. Like, they're real people.
Yeah.
So really like personalizing every aspect of marine biology to get them more, I guess, invested in it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, this is something that I say pretty often, and I've said it sometimes on podcast. I think very few people know what a scientist is, and most of it comes from popular culture. So we see it on television shows, and we see it on movies, and usually think of it as some like really nerdy guy, and he's usually telling us something about doom and gloom. But
yeah.
Not to trivialize it, but at the end of the day, it's still a job. You know, it's just ordinary people who are doing this stuff, who just happen to like really like what they're doing. You know, humanizing that element, I think, is so important to science communication. It's great that you're doing that. You said in the email that your master's, you dealt with looking at using VR to teach marine science or something like that.
Yes, so the lab that I work in, he specializes in using virtual reality tours and creating them. And so my master's research was to see, was a continuation of other research, but it was to see if doing an outreach program that uses this virtual reality technology as opposed to using like traditional lecture style lesson, if it's better or worse, or what effect it has. And he suggested that I do this project with students in China because it had already been done in the United States.
So what was the response with the students in China?
Well, so I'm still writing, so I can't really tell you anything definitively yet.
Oh, okay.
But to be honest, the most surprising thing was how well they responded to both. Like, there wasn't actually a lot of difference in between the two methods, but they really, really loved both the lecture and the virtual reality. They were so into any kind of marine science outreach.
That's cool. So this is the students in China. How did the students in the US respond? Can you talk about that one?
So the students in the US responded differently. They didn't necessarily have, I guess, an increase in knowledge gain from the virtual reality method, but they did show some increase in like more abstract enjoyment of the program. Still, the lecture method was still also really popular.
So what would this VR showing of look like? What would it be?
So if you can imagine Google Maps, like Street View.
Yeah.
Where you can like click around and click on a building and it tells you about it. It's essentially that. But what we do is we take a super ultra high resolution picture of, say, like a really rocky beach. And this camera can, and so when you take this picture, that's like a 360 degree panoramic image that you can zoom in on so far that you can identify like one snail on a piece of seaweed. And then on this image, we embed links called hotspots that when you click on them, they bring up a slideshow detailing what species of snail that is, or it can contain a link that will take you to, say, Wikipedia, or it can be a video that shows you how you collect data on these snails. And so we take a panoramic image of that, and then we present it to the students. They have their own laptop or they share a desktop computer, and then we let them explore for the same amount of time that we would normally lecture them for.
Oh, that sounds cool. Do you see VR being a part of an aquarium's exhibit?
Maybe. It's a cool way to show people something that aquariums can't really, is they can't really show you what the habitat actually looks like.
Right.
Unless you can like design your exhibit to look like that. And seeing an animal out in the wild in its own habitat is obviously going to be different than when you see it in an aquarium. And it is still just like a still image. So it might be a good thing to, I guess, enhance an exhibit.
Yeah.
But there are some things that should probably be refined.
Right. So.
And it's also probably expensive.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like the cost for the equipment, and then, you know, you need to get people to edit all of this stuff to, you know, make sure that all the links are there to basically plan the communication outreach as to how this is all going to work. It's probably going to take a lot of time and effort.
Oh, yeah.
And you're looking for these skill sets and et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I don't know. So maybe it might complement an exhibit if a museum can afford it. Would you say that?
Yeah, and I guess it might not be as prohibitive for a museum to afford it as it is for maybe like a teacher. It's kind of designed to supplement like a classroom program.
Right.
But it would require every student to have access to the internet and access to a computer, which in the United States is not as big of a deal now as it was maybe 10 years ago. But in other countries, it's not really that common.
So what got you interested in marine biology? You know, were you always that marine biology kid in school?
I guess so. Really, my first marine biology job, I was born and raised in Kentucky. And when I turned 16, I got a job at the local like exotic pet store so I could work in the saltwater fish section. And so I guess that was my start into science communication, is teaching people how to take care of their fish.
And from there, what else did you do? Was it always marine biology related, or did you branch out and do other stuff?
Well, I guess I didn't really branch out that much. I did my undergrad at the University of South Carolina, where I volunteered at the zoo to also do. I was a volunteer diver at the zoo, actually, which was a lot of fun. But I also did outreach with our department down there. I got a job maybe. I did do something different. I got a job as like a lab tech in an ecotoxicology lab, which was very different because I was the only person working in that lab, and I was by myself for like 2.5 years in the gigantic laboratory. So that was different. It was kind of rough not really seeing anybody all day, every day.
Like, no.
But after that, I did an AmeriCorps program in New London, Connecticut, where I went back to doing outreach with students of the New London School District. We taught them how to like sail, how to kayak, how to like look for animals in their like local water, and teach them how to swim, kind of thing. These are kids who don't know how to swim, have never been to the beach, kind of thing. So that was a lot of fun. And now I'm here, I guess.
And now you're here. And it seems if you want to become a marine biologist, you know, for an institution like a museum or an aquarium, you need to learn to dive, or at least it'll be very important. At least that's one of the things I got from the last one with Kevin. So is that true?
Well, we'll see. Getting a job at like an aquarium and a zoo is kind of, it's difficult because so many people want to work there. Like so many people want to work at the aquarium, and there might be one aquarium in your entire state. And so many people want to work there that it's really easy for these businesses to get volunteers.
Yeah.
And it's even easier to just hire someone who was volunteer because they know everything and they're just, you can hand pick them. So it's kind of difficult to just get a job in an aquarium unless you already have been associated with it.
Well, I guess that should be some advice for anyone who is listening and wants to get involved or wants to get a job. I guess start out as a volunteer if you can and hope for the best. I don't know. So you seem to have been involved in science communication for quite some time. Do you have any like thoughts or philosophies as to how science should be communicated to the public?
So my research, the thing that differentiated my thesis from a previous thesis was that I took my research to China, yes. And I also looked at how I can reach adults, people of the older generation, because I feel like having been in like outreach and teaching and communications for so long that we focus so much on young people and children and teenagers because like obviously you want to get the message instilled in them early so that
right.
they can think about it and grow up and make informed decisions. And so very little of it, at least in my opinion, is focused on their parents. And I just, one thing that continually shocks me over and over and over again is I'll ask a question and the kid will answer it right or close or have a good thought, and the parent will have absolutely no idea what the heck is going on at all. And those are the people I feel like need to know this stuff too, right?
Yeah.
They need to know about climate change. They need to know about their ecosystem because they're the ones that are voting on the things that affect them.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's not that kids aren't going to vote. They're just going to do it much later. But the adults are the ones who are, you know, making those decisions right now. And considering like so many of the things that we are facing today, you know, not just a pandemic, but with climate change and habitat loss and, you know, all of that comes down to adults making those decisions to voting for the right people or voting on the issues. So yeah, it makes sense.
And so that's why I think that the like continually growing mediums of science communication, like I'm loving seeing all these new like podcasts, video blogs on YouTube, like SciComm Twitters. That's good. I think we need more of that.
Yeah, we definitely do. And, you know, I think we need to find a way to support communicators better, you know, help them not just get their message across, but for like some of the more independent communicators, because I've talked to a few of them that's coming out, you know, we have to find a way to support them, you know. So it's very important, the work that everyone does, the work that you do. So, okay, how differently do children and adults react to a message? Do you have to like do something different, or can you do something that's similar that will engage both of them at the same time?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I have like a good answer for that right now, but I do know that it's way easier, I guess, with children. One, because, I mean, most of the students I encounter are already pretty knowledgeable. Like they usually know that sharks are important and aren't dangerous, or they usually know that cetaceans are usually really intelligent animals. But the, I guess, getting, and they know it's important. They know it's important, but their parents are just like, oh, cool, like a dolphin and a shark, they're two different things. I don't care. I'm busy. So getting people engaged, I guess, is, at least for me, was my challenge. Trying to loop it back to this might not matter to you now, but sharks are important because they affect the food chain and it might affect your ability to get tuna in the future or something that is tangibly related to their everyday lives, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Kids might have that more innate wonder about your world. So they're just interested for because they're interested. But I guess adults have to be invested in a way to become engaged.
Invested is a good word, yes.
So yeah, it sounds like it's a very challenging thing, what you did or what you're trying to do. And I hope you figure it out, because we need a lot of more invested adults right now, you know, especially with everything that's going on right now. You know, we need adults that care about this and want to do something.
I definitely agree.
So we've been talking for quite some time. So is there anything that you would like to say that we haven't talked about or covered right now?
If any of your listeners are ever on the fence about learning how to scuba dive, I would recommend it because it's a lot of fun.
Okay, yeah. So learn to scuba dive. That sounds like amazing advice. I've never learned to scuba dive. So probably a to-do list right now.
Well, yeah, it'll be kind of hard to do right now. But
yeah, it will.
When the world opens up again.
When the world opens up again, yeah. Hopefully. It'll be soon. Not that distant.
Hopefully, yes.
I guess we can start closing up now. And do you want to tell the listeners like how they can get in contact with you on social media, or if they have any questions? You know,
I'm open to questions. I guess I don't really have that much of a social media. It's funny. I'm actually embarrassingly like tech illiterate, but I guess I do have a Twitter. It's just my last name and my first initial at Losavio M, right?
That's so how just Twitter works. One word?
Just at me?
Yeah. Okay. That should be good enough. I hope people contact you and ask you a lot of questions, because it sounds like what you do or what you did, it's very interesting.
Thank you.
It was really nice having you. So is there anything final you'd want to say?
Just stay indoors and wash your hands and drink water. stay healthy, stay safe.
Stay healthy and stay safe. Yeah, I agree. And I hope we can do this again someday when the world is...
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
It was. I hope you enjoyed my talk with Mark and learned from it. And please like, share, subscribe, or leave a comment wherever you listen to this episode. Anything you do goes a long way to supporting this channel, and I appreciate any feedback you have to give. I also hope you'll join us for our next episode when I talk to a new science communicator.